what I hear?
Oh, yes. It's another episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com and hosted by yours truly, Amelia Dalton. We've all been there. The design cycle drum beats on. Your research and development team has been stressed for months. And the constant push for the next big thing keeps you up at night. Yes, our design cycles are getting shorter as our process nodes continue to shrink. And all the while, our end design life cycles are stretching out into the next decade. But how do we balance innovation and obsolescence? Well, my guest, Ethan Plotkin, CEO of GDCA, has some ideas about that. Let's bring him in and hear what he has to say. My guest today is Ethan Plotkin from GDCA. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me, Amelia.
Okay, so first off, welcome to Fish Fry, and please tell my audience a little bit about what you guys do.
Well, GDCA is basically a long-term support company. So what we do is we partner with board OEMs to help them deal with ongoing demand for discontinued circuit card assemblies. Put another way, we manufacture discontinued circuit cards.
Cool.
Yeah. We've been doing it for about 30 years.
Wow.
And we only do that, or we don't introduce any new designs.
Okay. So as you know, our design cycles are getting shorter than ever before, but our embedded equipment life cycles are getting longer than ever before. How do you think it is the best way to deal with this juxtaposition?
Well, you know, I think the reason why we are in business, right? 30 years ago, we recognized that this was going to be more of a problem as the economies of scale around commercial parts required much bigger production runs. However, as more customers kind of take these on because of basically the influx of demand of embedded computing equipment, you're going to have outliers, just more outliers in a larger population of users. So really what we recommend is basically helping board OEMs deal with that ongoing demand and those small numbers of ongoing demand by basically taking a more holistic view around the profitability of the products in their life cycle. And this is much different. This is a shift from kind of classic approach, which is kind of on an order by order or a customer by customer basis. So actually solving that problem around how do we make sure that the products in our portfolio are profitable, that is a different problem to solve than how do we kind of keep a product alive just a little bit longer.
Right.
And kind of an analogy that I like to think about is kind of what we're seeing in healthcare today, which is very much kind of a shift away from just curing diseases or treating illnesses towards more of a wellness approach. And that's kind of what we do, is how do we keep your portfolio overall well, and what are the strategies that we can employ to do that, versus how do we just kind of make money, revenue off of a particular product for this particular order.
Okay, so another important aspect of embedded design landscape is counterfeit parts. How do you think that plays a part in this?
Well, I think counterfeit parts are a huge problem. And I think the real problem that they pose is, aside from the obvious, which is reliability, they give board OEMs kind of a false sense of security that parts actually exist in the supply chain.
Right.
I think a lot of times what we see is board OEMs really feel like, hey, all I need is the parts, and I can go ahead and do this third, fourth, or even fifth last time buy for a customer. But really, I think what they find is that they don't really know if the parts are there in the supply chain until they don't receive them. And so it wastes a lot of time for board OEMs scrambling around on what is normally an exceptional business process. And they might put in 3, 4, 5 orders before they either get the parts that they need or discover that the parts don't exist at all.
Wow. Okay. So you said something yesterday that really resonated with me. You said we're dealing with discontinued products the way we dealt with it 30 years ago. So let's talk more about that.
Well, so 30 years ago, the landscape was completely different in the industry. It was kind of the dawning of commercial electronics. And I alluded to this in the first question. And basically, the competitive landscape 30 years ago was much less complex than it is right now. It wasn't as global, and there weren't as many players. So as a result, you could kind of fire customers that were less profitable, or for the few customers that you didn't want to fire, so to speak, by EOLing their product, you could kind of hold their hand through a difficult period until they were ready to upgrade. However, nowadays, people are so paranoid about losing their customers that they will oftentimes do things that are completely unprofitable.
Right.
So I think that that is a huge, huge issue. And I think a lot of board OEMs, they really feel like they have no other choice but to kind of bend over backwards to please these customers. So I think that that's a huge change. And that kind of has obsoleted this EOL exceptional support strategy that has been traditionally put into place. I think there's another issue that you mentioned, which was around how quickly the life cycles are for new products that are being introduced. And I think that the innovation that is now required in this hyper-competitive marketplace has put board OEMs, and all OEMs for that matter, under an incredible amount of pressure, more pressure than ever before.
Sure.
So whereas years ago, the life cycles came out maybe 1, 2, 3 years, I think the consumer electronics boom has really shaped the expectations of the industry. And so now people need to be introducing new products pretty routinely, drumbeat basis annually,
right,
for example. And so that puts a huge strain on their R&D department. And so the R&D department represents their A team. But when you have a sustainment issue, you need your A team working on it. It's not profitable work. So as a result, you're kind of robbing from your future to kind of like service your past.
Right.
And I think those are two really fundamental changes in the marketplace that have really driven these old ways of working into obsolescence themselves. Not only don't they work, but they're actually undermining what you want to achieve, which is faster introduction of new products and retention of customers.
Mm-hmm. All right, Ethan, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Let's talk about wine country.
Uh-oh.
So do you have a favorite vineyard? Do you have a favorite, you know, flavor? What are you heading toward when you first get to wine country?
So I think what we really look for in wine country primarily is an interesting setting that is dog friendly, right? So my wife and I like to go up with friends and our poodle. He's a black standard poodle, so he's a real dog. He's a good sized dog. He's 60 pounds, very well behaved. And so our phrase is kind of love us, love our dog, you know? And then, you know, it's always fun to discover new wineries. I mean, you don't have to like every wine on the menu, but, you know, it's always fun to like discover one real gem of a wine. So we have a lot of fun doing that.
Excellent. Well, this was super cool. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Amelia. I appreciate it.
How about a little news you may have missed? AI, Robots, and Space Edition. Now, folks, it's been a while since we've heard from IBM's Watson, and he still hasn't returned my calls. Well, apparently he's been busy helping a brand new AI assist robot called Simon get his space wings. So who is this AI interloper Simon? Well, Simon, which stands for Crew Interactive Mobile Companion, will be the very first artificial intelligence system to take part in an international space station mission. Okay, so created in collaboration with the Space Administration at the German Aerospace Center and Airbus, this free-flying AI astrobot has been designed to be an astronaut buddy of sorts. Okay, so what we've got here is a cylindrical flying robotic brain, which was designed using 3D printed technology. Super cool. Weighs about 11 pounds or so, and is about the size and shape of a medicine ball, with a diameter of a foot and a half. A front-facing screen will be the main point of interaction with the ISS astronauts. So Simon's main goal is to study the psychological effects of long space missions on crew members and try out suitable countermeasures, especially those that reduce stress. Okay, so how is Simon going to reduce the emotional stress payload of the ISS astronauts? Well, first, he has to make one friend. And that friend was Alexander Gerst, who will test out Simon's capabilities during the European Space Agency's Horizons mission between June and October of 2018. So, the Watson AI, the virtual brain of Simon, was trained using photos and voice samples of Alexander Gerst. Plans and procedures of the Columbus module of the International Space Station were also loaded into the Watson AI database. As a cool side note, Alexander Gerst actually got to help select Simon's computer voice and screen face to better help make friends with his robotic compatriot. So Simon's first set of tasks, with the help of Mr. Gerst, will be an experiment with crystals, a complex medical experiment using Simon as an intelligent flying camera, and an attempt to solve a Rubik's Cube. Yes. Well, I guess you've got to start a friendship somewhere, right? Well, Rubik's Cube and crystals are great for the short term, but what about the long term? Researchers in this project are planning on using Simon to examine the sociological effects that may arise during longer missions, say to the moon or Mars. Researchers also contend that a social interaction between machines and people, between AI-assisted robots with emotional intelligence and astronauts, could play an important role in the success of these long-term missions. Hal, are you there? Well, if you want any further information about Simon, the further goals of this flying robotic brain in space, or if you want to check out a couple videos of Simon in action, of course, I've included a link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. If you're designing just about anything these days, you're probably going to have to deal with mixed signal something or another. And it ain't going to be easy. Mixed signal design is becoming increasingly complex. And frankly, our old tools and methods aren't cutting it anymore. Maybe you need a little help with your next mixed signal design, or maybe you just want to hear my voice a little more. Either way, in a recent episode of Chalk Talk entitled Mixed Signal Digital Complexity Explosion, I sit down with Rod Metcalf of Cadence Design Systems and chat about the mixed signal landscape and how it's changing, and how Cadence's robust suite of mixed signal design solutions can help solve your toughest problems. And you can check out this episode of Chalk Talk by heading on over to the Chalk Talk section right on the top bar of eejournal.com. by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, or you can head on over to YouTube, keyword EE Journal. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, keyword EE Journal. It is chock full of all kinds of super cool techie videos, including that Chalk Talk webcast series I mentioned before. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can grab our Fish Frying RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, I love that stuff, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of March 9th, 2018, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.